Buddy. You may think that no more than a coincidence, but I don't. You never told me what that stuff about the white elephants was about. I expected you to find out for yourself, boy. Then Angleton does something I absolutely never expected to see. He sighs unhappily. Boss? Angleton leans back in his chair.
Tell me about Cheveline, he asks.
Cheveline? I frown. Wasn't that some sort of nuclear missile program from the 60s or 70s, something like that?
Cheveline.
He pauses.
Back in the 1960s, when Harold Wilson cut a deal with Richard Nixon to buy Polaris missiles for the Royal Navy, the tacit assumption was that a British nuclear deterrent need merely be sufficient to pound on Moscow until the rubble bounced. During the 1970s, the Soviets began to construct an anti-ballistic missile shield around Moscow. It was crude by modern standards, anti-missile rockets with nuclear warheads, but it would have rendered the British Polaris force obsolete. So, during the 1970s, a succession of Conservative and Labour governments pushed through a warhead upgrade scheme that replaced the original MRV warheads with far more sophisticated MIRV buses, equipped with decoys and able to engage two targets rather than one. The project was called Cheveline. It cost £1 billion back in the day, when £1 billion was real money, and they didn't even tell the cabinet.
£1 billion? With no oversight? I blink rapidly. We're subject to spot audits on office stationery, all the way down to paperclips.
Yes.
Angleton smiles sepulchrally.
We helped ensure security, so that it was relatively easy for them to spend an extra £200 million in 1977 to keep the Concorde production lines at Filton and Bristol open for long enough to produce 4 extra airframes for the RAF, Angleton says blandly. The plumbers ensured that nobody remembered a thing afterwards.
RAF 666 Squadron fly Concordes?
Flew them,
Angleton corrects me.
The long-range occult reconnaissance model, not the nuclear-armed model the RAF originally asked for in 1968. You may not be aware of this, but prototype 002 was built with attachment points for a bomb bay before the project was abandoned. Bomber Command wanted to replace V-Force with a fleet of supersonic bombers that could carry blue steel nuclear standoff bombs to Moscow. But the Navy won the toss. Instead, the RAF got the recon version, with supercargo space for the 6 demonologists and the optics bench to open the gate they needed to fly through.
My jaw is beginning to ache from all the speechless opening and closing cycles. You're shitting me. Angleton shakes his head.
The squadron was based in Filton and Heathrow, flying in British Airways livery. The aircraft movements were described as charter flights, and they wore the hull numbers of BA airframes that were currently undergoing maintenance. They flew one mission a week, departing west over the Atlantic. They refueled from a VC-10 tanker. Then the supercargo would open a gate, and they'd make a high-speed run across the dead plateau before reopening the gate home and landing at Filton for decontamination and exorcism. It's all in Codicil Black Skull, which you are cleared to read, incidentally.
I shake myself and take a deep breath. Let me get this straight. You're telling me that the RAF has a squadron of black Concordes which they currently keep in a hangar at RAF Cosford? Helen Langhorne was a former Soviet spy who, by a happy accident, for her employers, was in a position to poke around them? Which she did, with results that... I shudder, remembering again. A purple flash, face shrinking and crumpling in on itself around the harsh lines of her skull. And now the 13th Directorate are sniffing round?
Very good. We'll make a professional paranoid out of you one of these days.
Angleton nods, grudging approval. Concorde? I do a double take. But they've been retired, right?
That put a crimp on the cover story, certainly. These days they fly only at night, described as American B-1Bs, if anyone asks. A big bomber with 4 engines and afterburners is a much flimsier cover, and the plane spotters and conspiracy theorists keep the plumbers busy, but we cannot neglect the watch on the dead plateau. If the thing in the pyramid should stir...
He makes an abrupt cutting gesture with the edge of one hand. Dead Plateau? Thing in the pyramid? I've got no idea what he's referring to, but it sounds ominous.
You've been through a gate to elsewhere.
I remember a world in the grip of Fimbulwinter, where the rivers of liquid air ran down through valleys of ice beneath a moon carved with the likeness of Hitler's face.
There are other, more permanent elsewheres. Some of them we must monitor continuously. That world, pray you never see it, boy, and pray that the sleeping god in the pyramid never awakens.
I tilt my head from side to side, trying to spill the invisible goop that's clogging up my mind. Thinking in here is difficult, as if the air, hazy with the congealed fumes of state secrets, is impeding my ability to reason.
Boss, why are you here? Everyone thinks you've gone missing, AWOL with no forwarding address.
Angleton grins skeletally.
Good. Let's keep it that way.
My eyes are feeling hot and gritty from too much stress and too little sleep, but I manage to roll them anyway.
Big problem. You just tipped me off. Can you give me a reason not to out you to the bloody Baron team, other than because I said so?
Of course.
He looks increasingly, alarmingly amused. What have I gotten myself into this time?
You'll keep it to yourself, because while the cat's away, the mice may play, and one of this particular bunch of mice appears to be a security leak, and I'm setting a trap for them. You're the bait, by the way.
I'm the...
And to sex you up so they come after you.